Hello and welcome to Savouring Change, a podcast by the Brighton and Hove Food Partnership, where we highlight the people and projects that are using food to bring about positive change for individuals and for our cities. We dig into the main issues that we work with every day as a food partnership, unpicking some of the complexity around food and exploring in more depth why it's such an important issue for our cities. In this episode, I'm speaking to Vanessa O'Shea, who is the Community Food Team Manager at the Food Partnership. Before working for us, Vanessa worked for Chomp, which is a lunch and activity club for children and free school meals and families on low incomes across Brighton and Hove. Her work at the Food Partnership involves coordinating the Emergency Food Network, which consists of the city's 50 plus emergency food organisations that provide support for the increasing numbers of families and people facing food insecurity across our city. In this episode, we focus upon the Household Support Fund, which, if you're working with or experiencing food insecurity, is a phrase, no doubt, is a fund, no doubt, that you have heard of. If you aren't, though, you may not have heard about this fund, which is an £800 million support fund provided by central government and given to local authorities to distribute as they see fit, offering a lifeline to the country's poorest households. In the Autumn Budget Statement in October, there was no mention of the Household Support Fund getting extended, which suddenly plunged emergency food and support providers into uncertainty, with a huge portion of their funding threatening to get cut, at the same time as the numbers of people accessing their services at their highest and showing no signs of reducing. On Wednesday, the spring budget was announced, and it was with some temporary relief that we saw that the Household Support Fund was getting extended for a further 6 months. However, for many, this is essentially viewed as a sticking plaster. With little signs of the cost of living pressures easing on low-income households, a failure to continue the fund after October, or indeed replace it with a more permanent support system, will lead to a surge in families unable to meet their basic living costs in winter. In this episode, I speak to Vanessa about how the Household Support Fund is used in Brighton, hearing stories of some of the families that are directly impacted and benefit from this fund. We talk about what food support exists across the city, how food partnerships and food organisations are trying to help mitigate the cost of living crisis, and what the situation is looking like in the city, with rising food costs and food insecurity showing no sign of stopping. Vanessa, thanks for chatting today. Can you explain to me your role at the Food Partnership?
Yeah, hi Ruth. So I'm the manager of the Community Food Team, and we support all the emergency and food projects in the city, of which there are over 50. That looks like we hold network meetings usually about every month, and we bring together all the food projects, and that's where we can we can find out from them what their challenges are. We can find out how we can support them more. They can share their own challenges, and we can look for ways to just really support each other. So that's a big part of supporting the food network. We help them fund funding. We look at ways to input and distribute surplus food, and so on. So that's the big part of what we do and what I do.
Thanks, Vanessa. And obviously your work kind of takes place within a backdrop of rising levels of food insecurity nationally and locally within Brighton and Hove. I was wondering if you can tell me a little bit about like the rising trend towards food insecurity within the city. Like what are we looking at the moment in Brighton?
Well, we do an annual report every year. Well, it's annual, and we survey all of the projects in the city, and we ask them various questions like how many people are accessing your service and the demographics, etc. And we take that information and we use that to help us see, get a picture, a really good snapshot of what's happening in the city, and that enables us to see the trends as well. And this last year, 2013, we had an increase in people accessing food banks of 25%, which is a huge increase from the previous year. We saw more, trends were that we saw more working people accessing food banks, which would suggest that that, you know, people that are, you know, in work, they're just not bringing in enough income to meet their needs. We saw more people with mental health issues, presenting with mental health issues, asylum seekers, and students, actually. We saw students coming in, an increase in students coming in accessing food projects, again, which would suggest that they're not coping with their student loans and housing costs, and costs, general costs of living in the city. So 6,500, almost 6,500 people accessed food banks in the 1 week that we surveyed them last year, and a third of those are children. So, you know, the cost of living is particularly impacting, well, a wide demographic, but it's really worrying that it's particularly impacting families with children.
Yeah, those figures are really surprising to hear. Like 6,500 within 1 week feels huge. And I was really struck by what you were saying there, that it's like that you're getting like working people accessing food banks and students, because to me it's telling that like the infrastructure within this country at the moment is not enough for people. If you're working and if you're a student and you still can't afford food, and it kind of speaks to me of like a bigger problem, that like this infrastructure is lacking, but perhaps there isn't motivation centrally and at government level to like recognize that and actually do anything significant about it. Like it's falling onto the individual to try and like make ends meet, and it's falling onto the third sector to try and support them, when obviously I think there needs to be things bigger than what's happening right now to change this. And just before, when you were talking about the Emergency Food Network and what you do, you said that you like give a space to listen to the challenges that people, that like different emergency food providers across the city are facing. I was wondering if you could tell me what some of the challenges are that food providers across the city are facing.
I mean, the main, you know, there's various pressures on them. You know, the main pressure on them is that they're on the front line, so they're seeing the reality of what many people in the city are having to experience. You know, the embarrassment, the acute distress, the trauma of having to resort to a food bank, and is incredibly hard to see and to witness. So day in, day out, they are, you know, seeing the reality of what it is to suffer from food insecurity, and that takes a sort of psychological toll on them as individuals, and many of them are volunteers, and so that's, you know, that sort of, I think some people might call it PTSD. It's a very real thing. Obviously, the other, you know, main issue is that they're seeing an increase in people accessing their food projects, but at the same time they've got a decrease in food, and that's because of the donations are drying up and have dried up. So both from individuals, but you know, companies that the government gave, and we'll talk about household support fund in a minute, that has been very, very helpful, but that's still not enough. Also the cost of food has gone up, because all food projects will buy in some food, and so that, you know, the cost of food has gone up, you know, at least by a quarter. So there's huge financial pressures, and more people in the city are struggling now and aren't able to donate because they're struggling themselves. So food projects are in a very pressured, squeezed place, where they're seeing, as I said, they're seeing an increase in the need, but they're having a decrease in what they're able to provide.
It was really like poignant what you said there as well, that it's not just about the food that you're providing people, but at this point when people are having to access food banks and they're clearly in food poverty and insecurity, that is like quite a traumatizing experience, and that then the people who are providing emergency food are also dealing with people with like complex psychological needs, and it's not like they're qualified. To me, it just strikes me that like there's lots of people getting left behind at the moment because of how much costs are spiraling. I guess that leads me on to what one of the main things I wanted to chat to you about today, which was the Household Support Fund, which is a fund that Vanessa is going to be able to tell you more about than I do, but it's quite an important piece of funding from central government that is aimed at supporting those in poverty in general, I think. And I guess perhaps just to start this conversation, you could just tell me a little bit about what the Household Support Fund is and how it overlaps with your work.
So the Household Support Fund is a pot fund of money that was released by the government in 2021. And cast your mind back to what was happening in 2021. We just had our, I think, last lockdown at the end of that July of that year, June, July. I was running a food project myself at the time, and we'd seen such a, it wasn't a leveling experience for people in the city. You know, some people did okay, excuse me, during lockdown, and were able to, you know, carry on working or work from home or whatever. But what we were seeing in my line of work was we were seeing families in high-rise blocks not able to go out, not able to have any outdoor space, really, really struggling. We saw a lot of people in creative industries really struggling also because of their, you know, zero-hours contract and being self-employed. So Household Support Fund was kind of introduced to kind of prevent, you know, families from being even more struggling, even more people from struggling, even more from spiraling into more financial problems in the autumn of that year. And it was a kind of one-off payment. So that has been extended, I think, on a 6-monthly basis throughout the last few years. It's main spending. So it was administered through local government. So the central government allowed it to be administered through local government. And local government were then able to distribute it how they saw fit. And so in Brighton, it was distributed via vouchers, LDSF vouchers, they called them, people that were struggling. It was administered through preschool meal vouchers for children on preschool meals during the holidays. It's been administered through systems advice, energy advice, so paying for energy advisors, but also equipment around energy like slow cookers or heater blankets, that kind of thing. And through various community groups in the city as well benefited from it and were able to distribute it that way. And how it overlapped with us and me is that it was also distributed to the food projects, the food banks, and us as a food partnership to be able to kind of administer that. So that was, you know, really hugely helpful for the food banks at that point in time.
Thanks, Vanessa. It felt important to me. You said that this fund allowed the council, like local governments, to distribute funds how they saw fit, as essentially according to the need in front of them. People working at a local level ultimately have the best knowledge of like what support is needed, and it sounds like that fund was able to offer like a tiny bit of like specialised support where it might otherwise be lacking. This was part of the reason we were chatting today, was the fact that this fund was going to get, it was going to get cut in October, wasn't it? Like in October, there was a budget announcement that the Household Support Fund was going to be cut in March. And when I was speaking today on March the 7th, and the Household Support Fund has not been cut, but it has only been extended for 6 more months. So where does that leave you as someone working in community and emergency food provision?
I mean, it's difficult because we are, you know, it's the day after the budget announcement. It's news to all of us that this funding will be increased for the next 6 months. It's the 7th of March. This fund is needed from the beginning of April. So we have a matter of weeks, really. And I think it's very unlikely that it's all going to be administered within a few weeks' time. So there's almost certainly going to be a delay in any, you know, any sort of money funds materializing. That's a very huge challenge. And I think, you know, we've already talked about the way that Household Support Fund has been administered has been to those community local groups that really understand the need. And what they're seeing is the, you know, the impact of government decisions that are made from a place of you know, it seems very removed from the actual reality of what people are experiencing, what their need is right now. So I don't know that that's recognised really in central government, that actually decisions that they make take a while to be administered, and the impact on their decisions are seen from the community, in communities such as us and community groups that we work with.
Yeah, the STEM income, I think that really, I only kind of became aware of this in the last few months when I started understanding a little bit more about the Household Support Fund and just general how funds are administered, because there's a lot of steps, isn't there, from the government saying, we've got a pot of money, from you then actually being able to get it to the people who need it. Like, there's often a bit of a bottleneck in terms of like getting it out to communities who are most in need of that money. And I think that's something that at least the Household Support Fund is like, has been doing relatively successfully, I guess, because it's been going, like you said, to like food banks, energy services, like people who are already have a grasp of like where this money needs to go. And I don't know, a word that kind of occurred to me when you were talking, I don't know if this is how you feel, but it sounds like it's a kind of like a disempowering experience to be working in community food sometimes when you're at the whim of like a central government that aren't really listening to what you say, and you kind of have to just respond, you have to just be essentially like responsive to what they're doing rather than being able to control the conversation yourself. And yeah, how does that impact the kind of work you provide, because you're working on these very short-term projections and fundings and like forecasts, like 6 months will go so quickly.
Yeah, I mean it's really challenging, and you're right, disempowering is a good word to describe it. I think it feels like we're very much not in control of what decisions are made and the impact. So it certainly is that. It doesn't give us the chance to plan, to think ahead and be able to think about how, you know, we might, that the food sort of emergency food provision in the city might look different if we are staggering from one bit of funding to the next. We have to be, you know, we have to work very hard and be very proactive and think quickly and act quickly, as do the local authority. You know, to their credit, they're also figuring out now, I imagine, how to get this money out as quickly as they can. So it's frustrating and really not, you know, it's not a good way to manage public money, I would say.
Can you tell us a little bit more about like who in the city benefits from the Household Support Fund? Like, I know in the Food Partnership, for example, we use it to fund some jobs, right?
Yeah, I mean, we do. So that helps us, fund some of our work and my work and the team's work in bringing together and supporting the Emergency Food Network. But also it benefits the users of the food banks. It benefits children who are on free school meals, who are, you know, getting free school meal vouchers and the families there. It benefits maybe people that are coming out of hospital. There's a really pertinent case study, actually, that's out there at the moment that we recently blogged on, from someone who had just been, an older lady who had just been released from hospital, who's on a pension, and, you know, she had a packet of biscuits and something else in the house, nothing, and didn't have the care and support that, you know, that she needed. So we were able to, one of our projects was able to kind of supply her with hot meal deliveries. So that's another, you know, another project in the city that does that. So, you know, that's a huge and growing problem in the city is older people with those kind of social care needs when there just isn't the support. That's becoming a huge pressure. Also there's a really good little case study on our annual report, which is on our website, of a student that came down to Brighton, hadn't, you know, first person in her family to go to university. She came down to Brighton quite soon. She realised that she just didn't have anything left to spend on food. Her student loan hadn't come in yet. The costs in Brighton were so huge that she was living on very little food for several weeks before she found us and sort of called us, and we were able to help her to you know, give a food voucher out to her and then direct her to a food project. There's some examples of people that benefit from Household Support Fund, but it's mainly those who are, that, you know, they're already on a very low income, and that might be because because they're on benefits, and there's a cap on how much you can earn and bring in, as your benefits. So, for example, free school meals, you can't bring in any more. If you bring in any more income than £7,500 as a household, that's not including benefits, then you won't qualify for free school meals, and that's a very small amount of money. So there are families
per year, and that discounts even free school meals.
I mean, infants schools in Brighton are supplied with free school meals, all of them, but beyond that, if you want to access free school meals beyond infant school, then you need to not be bringing in more than seven. So you know, there's a financial trap that a lot of people are in that means they're living on very low income. Also, as we've talked about, those that are in work are also struggling, particularly if you're self-employed or you're on a zero hours contract and your work is up and down. We saw during lockdown a lot more creatives coming to food projects because their work had dried up and they couldn't pay their rent or their mortgage, and they were getting into debt and they needed help. So folk in work we've talked about. We saw, people, teachers, nurses coming to food banks who just, couldn't sort of survive anymore. So the cost of living is still really high. The cost of food is still really high. Like, my shopping basket's gone up at least 25%, but a lot of the low-cost items of food, such as pasta, sometimes gone up 100%, and those are the food items that, if you're on a low income, you're going to be buying. So, there might be a sort of average increase in food, for example, that might be quoted as 25% maybe, but actually the reality of that is that it's a lot more if you're buying basic foodstuffs. There's anyone that's struggling. And I think also if you're on a tight income, it can be one thing that pushes you into destitution, and that can be a relationship breakdown. It can be losing your job or ill health, or having to care for a child that's sick or a parent that's sick. Can all mean that you all of a sudden you need help. When you're on a tight income, that can quite easily happen. It just takes one thing like that to happen, and then you become vulnerable.
I guess people who are lucky enough or who have the privilege to feel like within a tight security net can't imagine what it feels like to be like one step away from fragility, but like no one's above that. It just it's quite shocking. It was making me think as well. It just feels very, I can't think of a better word than like frustrating, that there are these huge increases in the cost of living going on, like through the cost of living crisis and through the fact that housing is so expensive, especially in a city like Brighton, and the fact that there are all these like structural drivers that mean that people's lives are just objectively becoming a lot more expensive. Yet through taking away things like the household support fund, it feels like the government are like refusing to acknowledge that the reason that people are like needing to access food is because like there are structural issues that are making life very expensive. Like, I think it just baffles me basically that they would take away the support that like because really what should be happening is wages should be going up, and there should be investment in food, and there should be broader investment to make sure that like these costs aren't so out of whack that people can't afford to buy food. But whilst that's not going to happen, at least like the people who are picking up the shortfall and like trying to plug the gap, which is like charity providers and emergency food providers within the city, it just baffles me that the funding will get taken away from them. Like, I think it's bad enough in the first place that we have to have a system where it's like the third sector that is increasingly plugging an ever increasing gap for people whose wages aren't like meeting the needs of their shopping basket, but then just to take that away, it just feels crazy.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the response that that the government has said is that they have increased benefits by something like 6.5%, and they have given another, the average family £3,500 a year extra. They've issued, they've kind of implemented a few things, but it's so nowhere near enough. you know, if your shopping basket is up 25% or 50% or 100%, an increase, 6.5% isn't going to cut it. And it feels like a bit of unenlightened response. I'd love for those who make those kind of decisions to come spend time in food banks and meet people and understand what it's like for people that are really struggling, because it's very different from I think if they did have that kind of understanding, I think they'd got to make different decisions or look at things differently. It's a very short-term approach, and it's a sticking plaster approach, and stopping it for 6 months is just delaying the cliff edge of it, of people sinking into destitution again, unless a lot happens in that. It'd be great if food prices came down by 25% and fuel prices came down by 25% and housing costs came down by all that amount.
And wages went up by 25%.
Exactly. So, there'd have to be an incredible drastic change in cost of living experience for people in order for that not to be in the same position in 6 months' time.
And in the meantime, in case this, if this like golden future doesn't happen where food prices have shut down and wages have shut up, what kind of things are food partnerships and food organisations doing across the city to like support those who are kind of suffering the most right now?
That's the positive perspective that we have at the food partnership. We can see that there's lots of very hardworking, gifted, energetic people that are really trying to do things differently and help those in the city. So, there's as we talked about already, there's a project that puts together, gathers a lot of surplus food and funded to create meals for people that are housebound and delivers those, and for those that are coming out of hospital. Again, there's a huge gap in their funding. But they set up that up during lockdown and have continued it thus far. And they are plugging the gap of maybe where our statutory services end. And that, that obviously can't continue, but they are doing a great job there. We've got other projects that are very much, bringing the community together. So it's a community venue with, a food project, but it might be a affordable food project where you go in and instead of being given food for free, you actually pay a little bit of money towards it and you can choose what you want. And thereby that brings something of dignity and agency to that process of accessing emergency food. And it's psychologically, I think it's, it has quite a profound psychological shift in that, because you are taking control of your own life again. And that's really exciting, and those are springing up around the city. And those community groups often have a growing area. They have a patch where you can grow vegetables, and so then they are introducing that community to where their food comes from, and they can get involved in growing and eating their own food. So they're doing that kind of thing. So that's really exciting for us to see what's happening around the city in that.
Yeah, it's nice to hear that there's like so many people being active and like jumping to shift the narrative, like you say, to one of like dignity and agency, like showing people, giving people the option to like become active parts of a food community through growing food or through like paying a small amount. I think that's really important. How did we get here where we are now, that like the levels of food insecurity have like increased so much in the last years? Because I'm sure for me, it was only about 10 years ago that I remembered people starting to really talk about food banks. Like, I don't think that was a big thing in, like, the national psyche until around 10 years ago in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, I think 2013, there were under 10 food banks, something like that, and now there are over 50, which demonstrates how much people need extra help with food support. Well, in 10 years, we've had over 10 years of an austerity approach where everything's been really squeezed. So people are experiencing that. And obviously, in recent years, we've had a pandemic, we've had the war in Ukraine, and there's been the fuel crisis as well. There's been big global events that have meant that all the prices have gone up, but obviously the government policy hasn't helped that at all.
Yeah, a lot has happened in 10 years, hasn't
yeah.
But that's why food partnerships and food projects exist, to kind of like adapt around it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we play a really vital role in being that link between the community groups on the ground and local authority and whoever else as well. So I think partnerships are really really vital going forward.
I think so. They have to be adaptive, don't they? Because I think the pace of change is just, it's fast, and it's not a positive necessarily. Like, I know that, I think, I don't know when it tipped, but I'm sure it was like 10 years ago, probably, or around then, that the predictions tipped that for the future generations, their quality of life would actually start going down in comparison to their parents and the ones before them. And I think that's just like, there are huge shifts happening in globally, aren't they? And I think like lots of change and adaption is needed. And I think that's why like food partnerships are really important, and like community food groups, where you're kind of like doing it swiftly and doing it like with an positive, even if like it seems negative, like trying to do things with a positive attitude and with the idea of like agency and dignity, kind of being like, well, this is what we're working with and we're gonna try and make it a good experience.
I think you have no choice. You have to think, okay, actually we got less resources, what can we do with this? And I think that the community-based approach, where stepping away from that individualistic thinking and actually thinking, well, okay, how people are doing in the certain part of the city has something to do with us, even if we don't live there. It's all part of our city that we're living in, and if they're not doing well, then ultimately that's going to impact us. So we need to work together as a city. For those that have a lot more resource can help those that don't. And there is a really good, I just wanted to give this campaign a shout, a really good project called Class Divide. I don't know whether you've heard of them.
Yeah,
they have, where they've campaigned for children who are in more areas of deprivation to and on free school meals to be guaranteed a priority in all the schools in Brighton Hove. So something like that, where there's been quite a lot of campaigning and talking about it and bringing people together, and then creating a campaign, presenting it to the local leaders, has actually worked and changed policy for the better, and is hopefully going to be creating more of an equal sort of place where children have an equal shot at education and learning. And so I think that's really inspiring. But I think and there's some other great national charities like Bernardo's and Strussel Trust and that have the Chancellor quoted yesterday, so he said we've listened. So I think it's always worth it's always worth pushing for social change and not stopping. I think there's no other way to do it, really. In a food partnership, you have to be positive and proactive and keep pushing and keep campaigning, because sometimes it works.
Yeah, it does. Sometimes it does. I feel like some of the many food projects across Brighton and Hove are an example of that. Do you have like any particular stories that stand out to you from like your time working across like community food in the city? Like something for you that's like a compelling story or reason for like why household support then shouldn't get cut?
So there is one family I'm thinking of who she lives in East Brighton, and I think she's come from a sort of domestic abuse kind of situation, but she's come through that, she's accessing help, and that she's got various health conditions which makes life harder, and think things are really tight. But I saw her at one of the events, the Class Divide events I was talking about, talking about the importance of her children accessing the right kind of education. And I remember her being very shy and not able to, I never thought she'd be able to stand up on stage and talk about her experience. But she'd got so are on board with this, you know, this campaign to change lives, that she was able to do that. And I suppose, you know, Household Support Fund has enabled her to stop going, you know, disappearing underwater. It's enabled her to survive and get to a point where she's not only able to survive for her own family and herself, but to make a difference, to create social, be part of that social change. So I think we can see it as, you know, a one-off payment that might sort of ensure someone's got food in the fridge for a week, but actually the impact of having enough food, which you've got enough food to eat and you can feed your family, then, you know, that enables you then to, you know, to potentially change other people's lives or enable other, you know, other people to benefit, as you have done. So there's much more, you know, there's much more benefit to just receiving a payment than that seems on the surface of it. It can have profound changes to people's lives.
Very powerful. Thank you, Vanessa. I'll end it with that then. And I guess we will, as a food partnership, we will just be like, the next few weeks will be quite important ones, I guess, as we see what it means for the how the Household Support Fund's going to be distributed.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Savouring Change. If you want to find out more about the Household Support Fund and check out charities and organisations such as the Big Issue, the Trussell Trust and Barnardo's, who are all providing current coverage on the implications of the 6-month extension to the Household Support Fund. If you want to find out more about emergency food provision within Brighton and Hove, whether to get involved or to receive emergency food, head to our website at bhfood.org.uk, where you can check out our directory and have all the up-to-date information about emergency food support within our city.